The Pharaoh commanded all of his people, saying, "Every son who is born shall cast into the river, every daughter you shall save alive." And a man of the house of Levi went and took as wife a daughter of Levi. So the woman conceived and bore a son. And when she saw that he was a beautiful child, she hid him 3 months. When she could no longer hide him, she took an ark of bulrushes for him, daubed it with asphalt and pitch, and put the child in it, and laid it in the reeds by the river's bank. And his sister stood afar off to know what would be done to him. Then the daughter of Pharaoh came down to bathe at the river, and her maidens walked along the riverside. And when she saw the ark among the reeds, she sent her maid to get it. And when she opened it, she saw the child, and behold, the baby wept. So she had compassion on him, and said, "This is one of the Hebrews' children." Then his sister said to Pharaoh's daughter, "Shall I go and call a nurse for you from the Hebrew women, that she may nurse a child for you?" And Pharaoh's daughter said to her, "Go." So the maiden went and called the child's mother. Then Pharaoh's daughter said to her, "Take this child away and nurse him for me, that will give you your wages." So the woman took the child and nursed him. And the child grew, and she brought him to Pharaoh's daughter, and he became her son. So she called his name Moses, saying, "Because I feared him out of the water."
So what's his tactic this time?
Tell everybody to kill him.
Absolutely. This is an imperial edict for the Israelite parents to throw their sons that are born into the Nile River. What usually happens when you throw a newborn into the river? Yeah, that's what Pharaoh had in mind. And so this is no longer this sort of covert operation through the midwives. That didn't work out. This is, you know, full-blown, open national policy. We're going to kill Israelite baby boys in the Nile River. Now, do you remember what eventually happened to Pharaoh's army? Yeah. Again, do you see how God causes people to reap what they sow? So you've got this baby born. We don't even know yet the names of this boy's parents. They're actually Amram and Jochebed. But this woman conceives. She has a son. She sees he's beautiful. And she's able to hide him 3 months. But I bet his voice gets louder and, you know, whatever. And she felt like she couldn't hide him anymore. So how does she fulfill Pharaoh's order?
In the Nile, but it's not in the basket, so he
was gone. Yeah, she cast him in the Nile, but she had this ark, this basket that was covered with tar so it would float and wouldn't take on water. And that's how she put him in the Nile River. Kind of ingenious. And who actually watches what's going to happen to him?
His older sister.
And who happens along to discover this baby? Pharaoh's daughter. And of course, she realized a Hebrew baby, but you know, she's a woman, and here's this baby, he's crying, and so she wants him taken care of, and all of that. Now, you know, one of the things that I want you to see in this is the hand of God. You know, this reminds me so much of like the book of Esther. Remember that in the book of Esther, the name of God is never mentioned, but the hand of God is everywhere. You can't avoid it. You never see the name of God here as this story is taking place in these verses. But what's going on? God is behind this. Now, what God does so often looks so vulnerable. We know the rest of the story. We know that baby born to that couple was going to be the deliverer God has chosen to deliver the people from Egyptian bondage. But wow, the fate of God's plan is resting with this 3-month-old boy in a basket in the Nile River. God so often does things that look like they'll just never work out. What are the chances for that? God often moves in unlikely and vulnerable ways that we don't even recognize. You know, if you'd have been back here, you would have never known God had a purpose in all this. It reminds me of Isaiah 53:1, who has believed our message and to whom has the arm of the Lord been revealed? Who would have ever believed this was the arm of the Lord? You know, if you're looking for God only in dramatic, you know, very superpower, superhero kinds of things, God often acts in very calm, quiet ways. Remember Elijah and the still small voice in 1 Kings 19? Kind of reminds you of another baby who had sort of a fragile beginning, doesn't it? Remember Matthew 1 and 2? Where was Jesus laid? Yeah, in a feeding trough. And shortly after he was born, what did a particular ruler decree? Kill all the babies around Bethlehem? And it just looks like that God's plan doesn't stand much of a chance. But God's plans always work out. His power and wisdom is much greater than Pharaoh's, Herod's, or anything else. Now, if God has purpose for the people to multiply, for the people to be delivered from Egyptian bondage into the promised land, and for Moses to be the deliverer, what is there left for people to do? Anything? Did people have to do anything in this story? Yeah, what did they do? Yeah. I mean, first of all, Moses' mother is the one who puts him in the basket. And Miriam, his sister, is standing guard there ready to act. And when Pharaoh's daughter comes, she said, "Would you like for me to get a Hebrew nurse for the baby?" And she, it's not like when God is in charge, he doesn't expect us to be active and involved. He does expect us to do what we can. Now, what we can is very small compared to what God does. But he does intend for us to do our part. He uses our actions. But in this story, it's just funny. Because Pharaoh gives orders that accomplish the very thing he was most trying to avoid. The liberation of this slave people. It backfires on him. Because who rescues Moses? His own daughter. And whose budget pays for him to be raised? Wow! Jochebed is given wages to raise her own son by the Egyptian Pharaoh of all things. Kind of a foreshadowing of the Hebrews plundering the Egyptians when they left Egypt. And look at Acts 7 for a moment. Stephen had some things to say about all this. We'll look at some more of that in a minute. But this is really funny. In Acts chapter 7, verse 21, after he'd been set outside, Pharaoh's daughter took him away and nurtured him as her own son. Moses was educated in all the learning of the Egyptians. He was a man of power in words and deeds. Now, of course, Pharaoh, having Moses as his grandson, sees to it that he gets a proper education. See how God's sort of economical? You know, he trains Moses by the Egyptian schools. And again, it all backfires on Pharaoh. If you oppose God, likely as not, God will use your own resources to defeat you and to accomplish his purpose. It's just amazing that all of this leads to a man who has been raised by his mother to know he's a Jew and what that means. but educated and learned in all the Egyptian wisdom and knowledge, and in a high position. Now, one other thing I want to say about this story is, this is the second place and last place in the Bible where we read this word, ark. Moses was put in this ark. Remember the other one? Who was involved with that? Noah. And that particular ark was also covered with pitch. And both arks were used for what? Deliverance from a watery grave to save God's people to a new place. So you can kind of see God operating in sort of parallel fashion with Noah and with Moses. All right, any comments or questions through 2:10? Yes, Joe.
What do you do with Exodus 2:2 that she saw that the child was beautiful? Obvious mother would think that, but Acts 7:20, God saw the same thing.
I don't know if there's some kind of a way in that God has communicated with her that makes her realize she needs to preserve this baby. I don't really know. Somebody got a good comment?
Just wondered if it would be a good lesson for us to always view babies that way, if they're a blessing from God.
They are certainly that. Good point. Other thoughts? Tim?
Do you have any thoughts or say about how long you were nursed by his mom, how long that process was?
Yeah, you know, I don't really know how that was. It appears that Moses really understood well who he was. So I'm guessing that Moses' mother had a lengthy involvement with him. I wondered if there was a possibility that Moses' mother may be raising him during part of the time the Egyptians are training him. You know, because I would think if it's just till he's weaned or something, I can't imagine he'd remember how he was trained. So I'm guessing she has continuing involvement over a long period of time, but I don't really know.
So it's certainly not like these movies where Moses has no idea that he's a Hebrew and, you know, somebody tells him, oh, you're a, you know, whatever. And
the next passage, I think, will indicate he knew who he was. Other thoughts? All right, so that's Moses as a baby. Now look what happens with him, 11 to 15.
Now it came about in those days when Moses had grown up that he went out to his brethren and looked on their hard labors, and he saw an Egyptian beating a Hebrew, one of his brethren. So he looked this way and that, and when he saw there was no one around, he struck down the Egyptian and hid him in the sand. And he went out the next day, and behold, two Hebrews were fighting with each other. And he said to the offender, why are you striking your companion? But he said, who made you a prince or a judge over us? Are you intending to kill me as you killed the Egyptian? Then Moses was afraid and said, surely the matter has become known. When Pharaoh heard of this matter, he tried to kill Moses. But Moses fled from the presence of Pharaoh and settled in the land of Midian, and he sat down by a well.
You know, this is really a significant decision on Moses' part. And there's a couple of passages that talk about that. Let's go back to Acts 7 for a minute. I think we really need to reflect on Moses. It's easy to kind of skip over this and not think about what this meant for him. But in Acts chapter 7, verse 23, as Stephen was talking, he said, when he was approaching the age of 40, it entered his mind to visit his brethren, the sons of Israel. And when he saw one of them being treated unjustly, he defended him and took vengeance for the oppressed by striking down the Egyptian. And he supposed that his brethren understood that God was granting them deliverance through him, but they did not understand. And then look at Hebrews chapter 11, which also makes note of this in verse 24. By faith, Moses, when he had grown up, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter, choosing rather to endure ill treatment with the people of God than to enjoy the passing pleasures of sin, considering the reproach of Christ greater riches than the treasures of Egypt. For he was looking to the reward. So Moses is making the conscious choice to give up the fame and the pleasures and the riches of Egypt, to become one with his people, to defend his people. That's an amazing decision. We don't usually make decisions like that. We don't usually have quite that much to give up. And if you've ever been, the grandson of the most powerful man in the world, and if you ever had pretty much probably any pleasure you wanted, money's no object. Any of you had the kind of treasures that were buried in the Pharaoh's tombs? He had so much. And you want to just turn your back on that stuff and start defending these slave people you actually are a part of before you were adopted as Pharaoh's grandson? I can imagine you trying to live down that background. Try to make sure nobody find out that you were actually one of, those oppressed Israelites. But he did just the opposite. Very encouraging. I think it would have been easy for him to have thought, it would just not be a very smart idea for me to give up all the influence I've got here as Pharaoh's grandson. Who knows, I might be able to use that one day to actually, help my people out. Maybe God's providence is just sort of putting me here. Can't you imagine reasoning like that? But he doesn't. He chooses to become one of his people. And he sees one of the Israelites being oppressed by an Egyptian master. And what does he do? Yeah, kills him. Can't find anybody else to help, so he does it himself. And then the next day he sees two of the Hebrew men fighting, and he tries to intervene again. And what happens? Yes, that's exactly right. Wonder which one of the Hebrews rejected him.
One who was winning.
Yeah, the guilty one. The one who was beating up the other guy sort of resents Moses' intrusion into this. He chides him for acting without authority. He says, you intended to kill me as you killed the Egyptian. And when Moses hears that, he realizes that what he did to the Egyptian is known, and he's not going to be able to count on his people to support him. So he's kind of a guy without a country, he's sort of bit off more than he can chew. And can you imagine being in that situation? You make this incredibly difficult decision. At 40 years old, I'm going to not be Pharaoh's grandson. I'm going to give up the treasures and the pleasures, and I'm going to help out my oppressed people. And the next day, they say, "We don't want your help." How disheartening. Not every time we make good decisions do they turn out well. Sometimes you'll decide to do the right thing, absolutely the right thing, and it'll blow up in your face. It was a hard decision, it was a sacrifice. It hurt a lot, but you decide I'm going to do what's right. And it doesn't work. It doesn't work in the sense that the results don't match what you were expecting. Isn't that frustrating? Has that ever happened to you? I mean, Moses will get 40 years to think about it. It's just, wow. You know, he decides to flee to the land of Midian and sits down by a well. He flees to a land beyond Pharaoh's control. And he's going to waste the next 40 years. That's our idea. Shepherding sheep out there in the land of Midian. Remember that. The next time you make the right choice and God doesn't give you the success you thought it would. Comments and thoughts? Jason?
Yeah, the question I have, especially referring to what we see in Acts chapter 7, we see there it almost seems that Moses is lifting himself up to this position of deliverer instead of allowing himself to receive from the Lord. Would you look at it that way?
Well, I look at it as he made a really good choice. Now, I don't know if he was premature in what he did, although it's hard for me to see that he did the wrong thing in defending the Israelite from the Egyptian. So I think I'm content to leave it at, you know, sometimes we make the right choice and God doesn't choose to give us success yet. That's good enough for me in that, but there may be something else. Dave?
I think comes out as you read the context in Acts 7. It wasn't the Lord's time and it wasn't the Lord's way. He didn't lead the children of Israel out with a sword by killing the Egyptians. He led them with a shepherd's staff 40 years later.
And that's exactly right. I mean, if this had been the Lord's way and time, it would have been different. God's will is done. So God saw good in training Moses 40 years as a shepherd in the wilderness to then lead his people out as sheep, and we'll look at that in a moment. So it was the right thing, but I'm not so sure that Moses did anything bad in this. I just think God has some more training in mind for him. Yes, Dan.
You see just how much Moses sacrifices. He sacrifices his reputation, his livelihood, you know, his status. You know, for what? You know, for one man. I think a lot of times we're willing to make great sacrifices for maybe a group of people or for someone that, you know, we really love and know very well. But this Hebrew was probably someone that, you know, Moses didn't know, but he was this one man who was in need. And yet Moses was willing to give up all that for, you know, a stranger who, you know, he saw was being abused. And so we should likewise be willing to give up things, even for smaller causes.
Good point. Yeah. Yes.
In fact, with the discussion over here, if I were to try to think about a fundamental difference between what Pharaoh does and tries to do and what God eventually does. Perhaps it's the way Moses. The way that Moses tries to do this is by power and might and by his own strength. God brings the people out not by just power and might, but the people have to trust him in God, and rather than in their power and might. God's bringing them completely on his strength. So if there's a contrast, I guess that's what I would see.
Okay. Good point. Yes.
When you were talking about how you think it would be so easy for us to, if we were in Moses' shoe, to kind of make an excuse and say, well, maybe this is why I'm here, and not want to give up everything that he had, and maybe try to make it sound like a good thing to stay, you know, instead of leaving everything that he had. I think we can kind of bring that to our lives and know that we don't need to talk ourselves into or make excuses and try to make things look good that aren't, just so that we can do them or like them. You know, if we're with the wrong group of people and we say, well, maybe we should be here so that we can be the good example to all these other bad people. And there's time and place for things like that, and you need to be a good example. But I think it's really easy to, if you want to do something, to make an excuse to make it sound good instead of what it really is.
Yeah, that's a good point. We need to be careful that we don't misinterpret God's providence. You know, we can sort of think, well, God put me here in this situation for this reason, when that may not be what he was doing at all. You know, you hear people sometimes say, well, you know, God brought this wonderful woman into my life as a married man because he knew my marriage wasn't working out very well and he wanted me to be happy. Well, now we know enough about the Lord's will to realize that's probably a misunderstanding of what God was doing. I had a guy tell me last week that he had been dating a girl for a long time, and it wasn't working out very well, but he didn't have enough courage to break it off. And there was a girl at school, and they went on a school trip, and they did some things that they shouldn't have between them, and that gave him the courage to break it off with the other girl. He really felt like that was the hand of God in that. Well, you know, I think we do need to see the hand of God in things, but there was a time in 1 Samuel 23 when David delivered the city of Keilah and stayed inside the walled city. And Saul, in verse 7 of 1 Samuel 23, when it was told Saul that David had come to Keilah, Saul said, God has delivered him into my hand, for he shut himself in by entering a city with double gates and bars. Saul said, this is God letting me kill David. Well, you know what God did. He told David Saul was coming so he could get out. But sometimes we just sort of want God's will and God's hand to be whatever is going to be convenient for our desires. So we do need to be careful about that. And bottom line is, do what's right. You know, don't try to overinterpret providence, especially if it flies in the face of what God's will is. Roger.
It seems to me like the first time Moses tries to deliver the people, tries to move by his own strength, by his own power. It's interesting to me that here Moses thinks he can do everything. When God tells him, hey, I really want you to go deliver the people, he thinks he can do nothing. And it's almost like God broke him down and tell him, you can't really do it by your own power, and then with my power, you can do it.
Maybe so. You know, I'm not fully persuaded that Moses did anything wrong in this, but perhaps it was a humbling thing that would help him depend more on the Lord. Certainly, we need to depend more on the Lord. And to whatever extent Moses did think he could just do this on his own, he needed to be broken back. We certainly can't do nothing on our own. Yes?
I think it's a positive thing that Moses is doing here. But it's God's timing versus our timing. Like in Genesis, Abraham trying to force the promise, Jacob trying to force the promise of the children doing different things. And it seems like God sees the passion in Moses. He's building up. God's still training him.
And perhaps we ought to start seeing through this a little bit of the character and attitude of Moses. What kind of a man was he? You know, what we can see is that he's a man who stands up for one of his fellow Israelites who's oppressed by an Egyptian. Stands up for a fellow Israelite who's being oppressed by an Israelite. Look at the next section and see if you don't see a similar quality in this section, 16 to 22.
The priest of Midian had seven daughters, and they came and drew water, and they filled the troughs to water their father's flock. When the shepherds came and drove them away, Moses stood up and helped them and watered their flock. When they came to Reuel, their father, he said, how is it that you have come so soon today? And they said, an Egyptian delivered us from the hand of the shepherds, and he also drew enough water for us to water the flock. So he said to his daughters, and where is he? Why is it that you have left the man? Call him that he may eat bread. And Moses was content to live with the man, and he gave Zipporah his daughter to Moses. And she bore him a son. He called his name Gershom, for he said, I have been a stranger in a foreign land.
Okay, so when he gets to Midian, this priest of Midian has seven daughters who've come to the well, and the shepherds came and drove them away, but Moses stood up and helped them. and watered their flock. I see in that another time when Moses comes to the aid of the oppressed. Granted, these were, you know, perhaps some nice looking women, but he's been doing that all along. He's the kind of guy who comes to the aid of those who are oppressed. And their father is surprised they've come back so soon and asks about it. And they say, well, this Egyptian delivered us from the hand of the shepherds and even drew water and watered our flocks. And he's like, where's your manners? Why didn't you bring him back? And so they bring him to have something to eat. And this kind of puts the narrative in fast forward. The hospitality leads to marriage, which leads to a son, and which leads to him dwelling 40 years in the land of Midian, working as a shepherd. Are there not some things in this that are being good preparation for Moses' work? He is learning the life of a deliverer. He's learning the heart of somebody who has compassion on those who are oppressed. And he's learning how to be the shepherd of somebody else's flock. Now in Psalm 77:20, that's exactly what Moses was to become for the Lord. You led your people like a flock by the hand of Moses and Aaron. Psalm 77:20. So that's the work Moses is going to have, to lead this flock of Israel for the Lord. And so I see God is preparing Moses through this 40 years. But I wonder what Moses saw in this 40 years. You know, sometimes it's very discouraging when we would really like to be greatly used by the Lord in very dramatic ways, and he doesn't seem to be doing that with us right now. We're still out there tending the sheep in the wilderness for our father-in-law. And we don't seem to be getting anywhere with our real life's goal and mission. Do you feel that sometimes? You know, sometimes people, you know, will talk about how, you know, I really wish that the Lord would let me do this. You know, I want, and it's not bad stuff. They want to do great things for God. But at this point in time, the Lord has not opened those doors. What do? Wait. In this case, 40 years. Justin?
At Noah, I think that's never God's fault, though. I think that's always our fault. If we're not doing something that, if we're wanting to do something great for God, I think we can always do that if we're determined enough to do it.
Well, Moses is pretty determined to deliver the people.
I'm actually sure it's not in God's plan to do something like that, but I think it's always our fault if we're not doing something that we
need to be working for the Lord, but what the Lord gives us to do may not be what we would choose to do. Now, I think that's the thing. Was Moses doing the will of God in Midian? It looks like from what little bit we can see, yes, he was. Was he a servant of God in Midian? Yes. Was it what he really wanted to do 40 years before? No. You know, sometimes it's like, you know, do we have an agenda that may not be what God's agenda is for us? You know, maybe, you know, some people are really determined. They really want to be supported full time to preach the gospel. And that may not happen. Well, maybe God doesn't want that to happen, or maybe he doesn't want it to happen right now. Is it bad to support ourselves, making tents and doing the preaching and teaching we can at nights and on the weekends? Well, you know, the Apostle Paul did that, so it must not be a bad thing. You know, we can't just, you know, say, well, if I can't be used by God this way, I guess he just doesn't care about me. Or I guess I just won't do anything. And sometimes we wait a long time, or maybe forever, and we don't see the thing we would have chosen to do happening in our lives. And so I think Moses is a great example in that. And maybe after 40 years, and he's 80 years old, maybe God will use you then in the way that you were hoping for. That's what really happened in this case. So it's just really encouraging, I think, to identify with Moses and some of these ups and downs in his life, and just reflect upon the fact that really he's a model for a lot of the things that we go through. Comments?
I was going to ask about this guy, Reuel. Since he's a priest, I guess he knew he was Jehovah?
I'm assuming so, although later on in chapter 18, he seems to glorify God more because Moses told him the events that happened in Egypt. But I'm assuming he has some relationship to God. Obviously, non-Jewish people could have some relationship to God, but we're not just not told a lot of details about that. Yes?
I can understand, like, sometimes as children, we want something our way, we want something to happen. Our parents are like, no, they know what's best. They know, like, the consequences, you know, like, well, we don't know, and we ask something, like, can we have this happen, you know? We get all excited, and be like, no, and they know what's best for us, same thing with God, like, we want this and this, and God used me for this and this. God may not want that. It's not mean that it's our fault necessarily, it's just God knows what's best.
Sure.
He knows consequences.
That's right.
I think a lot of times we're very stubborn as human race, and we want to do what we want to do. And I think when we're talking about not necessarily seeing what God's plan is for us, and I think that like that goes on us. And what it is we're not seeing what His plan is. And I think you see that even when you go to the New Testament, the apostles are following, and they're. You can tell that they're eager and that they're wanting to follow him, but they're not seeing what he's really doing. And I think a lot of times he's kind of over our head, and us being stubborn doesn't really want to see what we need to be seeing.
Sure. God will do the right thing. Let's serve him and submit to him, and we don't have to control the results. Seth?
Best example of that would be Job. Job didn't have a clue why stuff was happening to him, but he just served God anyway.
Absolutely. Job is a good example of that.
Was Reuel a Midianite?
I assume he was.
So he was a descendant of Abraham.
Of Abraham, that's correct.
Through another one. Okay.
Okay. 23 to 25.
Now it came about in the course of those many days that the king of Egypt died, and the sons of Israel sighed because of the bondage, and they cried out. And their cry for help because of their bondage rose up to God. So God heard their groaning, and God remembered his covenant with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. God saw the sons of Israel, and God took notice of them.
What did the Israelites do here? Cried out to God. Why? Yes, all that they were suffering caused them to cry out to God. What was the result of that? Yeah. When they cried out to God, God heard their groaning, remembered his covenant, saw the Israelites, took notice of them. Their cry to God, their prayer to God, was really the beginning of their deliverance because it brought God's involvement in this situation. How many times, that's what we need to do, turn to the Lord. And how many times are we tempted to go other places instead of turning to God? You can see God's compassion really in this. And so that brings us to God beginning to act in visible ways now that we can see. He's been acting for a long time, but in ways we can see to bring about deliverance. And really, I want to suggest this to you, that what God has been doing with Moses is really the same thing he's going to be doing with the nation of Israel. There was a conflict between Moses and the Egyptians. Pharaoh wanted to kill Moses. Moses escaped from Egypt and went into the wilderness and then had an encounter with God on Mount Sinai. There is a conflict of the nation with the Egyptians. Pharaoh wanted to kill them. They escaped from Egypt to the wilderness and they encountered God on Mount Sinai. So really, Moses has just sort of been walking in the steps that the nation itself will now begin to walk. All right, any questions or comments through chapter 2? Yes, Bill.
Why did they wait so long to cry out? Was it that their fear for Pharaoh was greater than their fear for God? Wasn't that just taking it interesting that they cry out after the Pharaoh dies, not while he's alive and they're in bondage?
Yes, I'm not sure what to say about that, because I'm not even sure when this cry was. Is that after the Pharaoh died that knew Joseph and they've been crying all along? Or is it after this current Pharaoh dies? I'm not sure about that. So I'm not sure if it's a delay on Israel's part or if it's God working the process over a long period of time. Jason?
It's really encouraging to see, though, that you know, even before his people cry out to him, he's already working.
Certainly, God told Moses in Genesis 15 what the program was going to be and how they'd be in Egypt for 400 years and they'd be oppressed and then God would deliver them out and into the promised land. So God's been knowing what was going on with this for a long, long time. Justin.
I think sometimes we get discouraged with prayer and because we feel like God already has his plan, so why are we asking him to do things and change things when he already has his plan? But I think you can see here and throughout the whole Bible that we can sway his thinking and his decisions and we can change his mind if it's according to his will.
Yes, in some ways. And really what we pray is for his will to be done. I think what our prayers can do is to cause God's will to take effect. Mike?
It's pretty obvious that he cares about them. And it's reading, you know, here, we make that point a lot, that how great he is to care about somebody, these slaves, they can't contribute anything to him. It's interesting that even though he cares about them so much, he's willing to allow them to go through something that would make them, as we read, cry out, not just always cry off, but really seriously break that he was allowed them to do that, and sometimes he allows them to go through that day. That doesn't mean he's not there. That doesn't mean he's not watching us and caring for us.
Good point. Yeah. All right, so chapter 3, somebody read